This is the Formation Lab.
Welcome on, welcome all to the veritable blizzard of information that is the Formation Lab. And what an apt description, because I'm Luke, I'm joined as always by Tim, and there is no more blizzardy place on Earth than where we opened up our Formula One season in Bahrain. Tim, how are you doing?
All moral questions aside, I am doing quite well. I actually found the track to be a pleasant opening, with the testing, preseason testing there, and then the first round there. It only makes sense from a logistics standpoint. And I thought that it wasn't half bad. I was impressed by the facility. The layout of the track is okay. And it's just kind of impressive. It was a pretty way to open it up.
I agree. Look, I would rather we open up with Albert Park just because it's tradition. But if there's one thing we've learned over, last 20 years of Formula One, is that tradition means bullshit and you're going to get what you get. But to be real with you, though, I think Bahrain is pretty solidly a top 10 track in Formula One. So you're kind of kicking things off with a bang. We talked at length previously about kicking things off with, like, when you kick the season off, it's always going to be with a bang. So put Albert Park there so it seems less boring.
Yeah, it's always going to have some fanfare. And the fanfare and the anticipation and the pomp and the circumstance kind of lasts you the whole year, because you forget pretty quickly how boring Melbourne tends to be. That said, Bahrain does lend to some better racing. Turns are better. The straights are better. It's purpose built for Formula One, but that's, neither here nor there. So it should be that. But I do think that it played well. And, coming into this, we do have an apology for the listeners for our lack of a preseason preview. Life just got in the way. But we had a bunch of storylines heading into the start of the season here, and this weekend was just full of as much anticipation as there was last year for the grid to return with an all new shakeup in regulation. We were still excited about who could have moved up, who could have moved down in testing, and who could have taken a big step toward taking the fight to Red Bull. And here's the answer that we learned this weekend: nobody.
Well, at the very least, it's not going to be Ferrari.
The closest competitor, I think, actually will be a Mercedes back car, but it is not a Mercedes. It is the Aston Martin. Looks fastest of the rest, other than Red Bull. Alonso was, kind of really taking big chomps in those final stages out of Checo Perez's 25 or 26 second lead that he had right after he passed Carlos Sainz. Alonso passed Carlos Sainz, and the gap right around then was about 26, 27 seconds or so. And Alonso got that down to, I believe, sub 20, which was good. He was starting to really, close that gap, but unfortunately he just ran out of time. And so he had to settle for third place on the podium, but that Aston Martin does look very strong. Lance Stroll, who, again, we've not made any bones about, being not the most talented driver in the world, and came into this weekend gravely injured. He was in a mountain bike incident, where he broke both wrists and his foot. And he still raced, this weekend, and actually turned up an absolutely respectable sixth, which I am deeply impressed by.
I'm going to interrupt you. We are recording this live on a Sunday. It is currently, it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Colton Herta, Tim.
I have the race up here. What we're talking about, ladies and gentlemen, is the IndyCar Grand Prix of St. Petersburg. And there have been quite a few shenanigans. And lap 50 is what we're on currently as we record the Formula One race. And Colton Herta, he runs out of time, talent, patience. And I think he just ran out of talent on this one.
I think he has all the untapped talent in the world, but right now he is looking quite a bit like Grosjean's reputation in Formula One, where he's fast, but can he not can he please just stop? He just Colton Herd it all over the place. Yeah, running in, I think it was seventh or eighth before that, and just smashes into a corner.
Went in way too hot to a corner. What I mean by ran out of talent, ladies and gentlemen, is he came into a corner, and Colton likes to be last on the brakes. However, sometimes he misses it. So when I say ran out of talent, he ran out of the ability to miss, to judge that corner, and he just found himself in the tires and out of the race.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like playing a game of chicken. It's like, man, if you don't win that, you know, breaking competition, you lose really hardly, which means that the smartest way to play a game of chicken, Tim, is to not really play it at all.
Correct. The more conservative you are, the better in some instances. Discretion is the better part of valor, and you got to know when to hold him, know when to fold him, and he just doesn't know when to fold him and get out of a tight spot. St. Petersburg is not a forgiving track. The barriers are almost raw everywhere along the circuit, and you have tire barriers in some situations.
Yep.
And he was just going in too aggressively. That's all there is to it.
So we're going to go from classic opener. I mean, St. Petersburg to me is a beautiful season opener, to the new opener. We're going to go back to Formula One for a second here. And Tim, let's run. Do you want to run up or down? Because we'll run through the grid.
You know, let's start from the back, because I think we'll get through a few more of those than anything else.
We'll run through the grid, and we're going to kind of wrap our observations for how this season is going to go into this. And Tim, before we do that, I do want to give you a chirp. You went into you came on. We didn't give out a preseason preview. All right, I had a very crazy week at work. My grandmother passed, so Norma Jean, my heart's with Norma Jean, and we didn't have time to be honest with you. I was with family, but Tim, you did come on my show on WJJY and give your preseason predictions on Friday.
And I was going to say, I was invited. It's not like I invaded. I was invited.
No, you were invited. And well,
like the vampires
it
of
was
old.
Part of my job. Yeah. Is, you helped me out.
I did. Yep.
But you did say it was a Ferrari kind of year. And
oof, man, you know, here's the thing. Ferrari let themselves down in reliability. So starting from the, it was not the greatest. I'm trying to qualify it, but yes. And I freely acknowledge that with that admission that I wanted it to be a Ferrari year because I was excited to be a member of the Tifosi, we did put a great big Tim-sized grain of salt with that statement, saying that in all reality, Red Bull's going to run away with it. Ferrari's probably going to bungle it, and you're looking at, you know, whoever else to fight for third and fourth. So that is actually what ended up happening. Our big old grain of salt came in handy right there and preserved our systems, because that is kind of what came out this week in Bahrain. But leading up to Bahrain, the practice sessions, you saw a couple of things happen. Namely, Aston Martin start to show real pace with that, with their car and with their new driver, Fernando Alonso, who came from an insanctimonious end at his tenure at Alpine, and started this year with such excitement that he felt very good in the car. All the practice sessions looked good. And doggone if he didn't go ahead and place it up top. But I am starting to ramble and justify myself. I'm sorry. Good call. It's been a minute since we've talked, and I'm just so excited, Luke.
I know. No. I put a little message there like, hey, we're going for the bottom up.
Yeah,
we'll get to Aston
Martin.
Sorry.
All right, I got excited. All right. It's the first race weekend, man. You know, I've got IndyCar in the background. We're talking F1. This is Christmas.
I did technically start from the bottom up because Charles Leclerc DNFs and Ferrari. Look, man, they demonstrated their value. They engaged you physically. You said, I think it's this time. All right. Now they're starting to neglect you emotionally, or maybe emotionally is neglect engines.
Yeah, they Fred Vasseur made a big thing of coming into this weekend saying the reliability had been solved. And what came out this morning was that they actually needed to swap out an electric component on the power unit in the Ferrari. which apparently didn't solve whatever electrical issue he was
Nope.
experiencing, because that part went bad and it was an electrical issue that knocked that Ferrari out. So yay, reliability. Before the first race, we're already swapping out power unit items. And to be honest, they didn't seem to have a whole lot of pace anyway. They didn't couldn't really figure out the degradation on the tires. They did go for the two-stop strategy and looked pretty good, honestly, from the strategy call and from the pit stops they had. They looked pretty decent. Their first pit stop was a double with Carlos and Charles Leclerc. And then Sainz came in later for a pretty flawless pit stop again, because Charles didn't make it because he ended up on the side of the road where he finished alongside. And this is where I bring it back, Luke. I always promised it's a long walk, but I'll bring it back to Oscar Piastri, who also suffered a power unit failure of some sort. I honestly have not looked into what statements McLaren have made about that particular piece. I feel like, Luke, going into this weekend, McLaren has suffered a pretty systemic knock against their integrity. Because with Drive to Survive, where Zach Brown's dealings were called into question on the basis of their ethics, he didn't look that great. And just across the boards, communication is slanted. It's political behind the scenes. And it's looking like all that goodness that you and I have talked about before is not actually goodness anymore.
Yeah. And when goodness doesn't happen behind the scenes, and I'm waiting for someone to learn this, because, I mean, this is, we've gone on and on about what we can learn from Mercedes dominance over the last decade. When goodness does not happen behind the scenes, goodness does not happen when you could construct a car. And we saw this with McLaren coming into this year, right? They're drama behind the scenes and it's distraction, right? You hear, Tim, here in North America, we see a lot of sports teams, they install a ping pong table, all right, in their clubhouse, all right? Their things are going well, they install a ping pong table. And then a couple years later, when maybe things aren't going very well, they take the ping pong table out of the locker room because they want to focus on football, right? This is the ping pong table. McLaren had a ping pong table. They got distracted and they need to take the drama out and focus on actually racing, because I don't think that was their focus this offseason. They didn't think it through. They obviously didn't dedicate enough oversight or man hours to it, because I don't know how else to say it, but their car looks like dog water this year, Tim.
It is well and truly off the pace. It is well and truly unreliable, obviously, as things have shown. It was just a quick search. It was a gearbox problem. Oh, good. The one thing that McLaren is in charge of. That's great. And then Lando Norris, stone dead last, two laps down. So McLaren is now, I personally feel, the laughing stock of Formula One. That is a shambolic opening to your season. It was something, yeah, it was gearbox related, it was computer related, it was just not good. And then they swapped out steering wheels to try to fix it, didn't fix it, and Lando was suffering something too. This was a terrible start for McLaren. I do not foresee good things for them this year. But the other person that didn't end and did not finish the race, besides Charles Leclerc and Oscar Piastri, and also had a shambolic return to 2023, was one Esteban Ocon, who I believe had five separate penalties. Am I correct on that? I do recall five.
Tim, he's a French driver for Alpine. He was protesting the race. He was on strike.
He was something, because not only that, but he, let's see, Esteban Ocon looks good.
How many?
Let's see how many.
He just—it's like he forgot how to Formula One. They forgot what they were doing.
So everything went wrong today after being penalized three times and retiring early. So that, I guess, it was five incidents that I had in my mind. I apologize to the listeners. But the first incident, obviously coming in, he had to serve a time penalty for not lining up in the pit box correctly. So he had to duck into the pits. He also had to change his front wing because he got into some trouble because he kind of sailed around the racetrack a little bit in the opening stages and banged up his front wing. So he goes in, and a mechanic during the pit stop where they're going to serve the time penalty. And so listeners understand, when you serve a time penalty in a pit stop, you pull into the pit box and no one is allowed to touch the car at all. It is supposed to sit there for the duration of the time penalty. And then you can start on your and then you can start working on the vehicle. He pulls in and the mechanic just instantly reaches out and starts the procedure. So he touches the car. So he has to stop. They bungle the pit stop anyway. So that
I should mention this.
Matter.
This isn't even a Formula One rule. If you go down to like low level karting, this is also how penalty procedures work. I don't even know how you brain fart that bad.
This is like. You know, stepping near the bag, you know, in baseball, not on the bag to get the out. It's that fundamental.
Yeah.
It is really, really stupid. But he bungled that, and then he was speeding in the pit lane. So he had to serve a time penalty for that. And came, it was a shambolic return. He said that he has never had a worse day in the car. Everything went wrong today. Yeah, literally every decision you made was very un-Formula One. And his entire garage, honestly, it's like they all caught, amnesia, COVID style. It just spread like wildfire through that garage. And none of them could remember how the sport worked.
Like I said, you know, French driver, French team, you know who invented time penalties, all right? The English. And you think that the French team is going to let that fly? No, sir.
No, but we'll get on to better news about Alpine later. So, because I feel we should probably continue to Zhou Guan Yu, who had an unremarkable opening round of his 2023 season. Alfa Romeo looks like they have a binary result. It's probably something to do with gremlins or just a talent deficit. But hopefully Zhou Guan Yu can improve in the next round because he is a talented driver. He did show a lot of pace late last year as he got used to Formula One. But then we had my guy, my boy, Nico Hülkenberg ended in the Haas Ferrari down in 15th. They had a really hard time. They suffered a lot of damage that was not their fault. And it was kind of a brutal time for them. I do think they will see better results as the year progresses because they're already anticipating upgrades.
Yeah, they are. I have high hopes for Haas to be able to sneak into points pretty, I don't say consistently, but to be able to sneak in, you know, 1, 2, 4, 6 points here and there as we move on throughout the season. I'm not going to say that they're going to kill it, but I would be surprised if they were in the bottom two still. I think they have potential. Kevin Magnussen, also, we're going to hopscotch a guy real quick. Kevin Magnussen also had, I have high hopes. You know that Hulk, you know that Mags are a good driver. Just let's be real, Tim. All right. It's the first race of the season and it's Haas.
Yeah.
Are we surprised? No.
I think.
Have they ever had a good start to the season?
Yeah, they have. Actually, they had last year. They had a really great start.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Last
K-Mag
year.
K-Mag ended sixth on the day, and they had a great time. I think they have a road to hoe. I think a lot of teams made a step forward, and they did too. It's just compared to everyone else, it's all kind of in the wash as quantum leaps are made. But I think that the future looks good for Haas in 2023. I also think it's funny that I really do want your opinion on this. We did not script this. We had not planned any part of this question before the show, but I feel like Gunther Steiner, because of Drive to Survive, is now unfireable.
He almost
Haas,
is.
Haas has to keep him. They cannot fire him, no matter if he blunders it, if nothing goes right. He can't, like, Gene Haas can't get rid of Gunter. It's over. He's bigger than Gene.
How much of their branding is Gunter Steiner? Go through their social media posts. When you get home, listener, and see how many posts are of Gunter Steiner. He's easily a third, I would think.
He's only a third, and he is the most successful thing for that team right now.
He is the team.
Even if you
fired him, he's the kind of guy who gets fired and then 10 years later gets a statue built of him out in front of the place. Right? Yeah. Like, he at least has a plaque or a boat or something.
He does. I do think I am, for listeners at home, I am currently wearing my Red Bull jacket in honor of the Red Bull perfect opener. Mostly because I want to pull for Checo, because I'm an active Max hater. who honestly, I'm always going to root for the number two to Max, because let's be honest, at the end of the day, he is a once in a generation talent. And behind the wheel, he's magnificent. He really does drive every car to the raggedy edge, but he is such a dick. I hate him.
Also, where's the fun in rooting for a guy to win every week? Come
exactly.
On.
but I think my next jacket will have to be a Haas jacket. Because I cannot help but root for them every single weekend. I was sitting there today being like, get Max off the screen. Bring me Nico Hulkenberg. Bring me the old man. Come on.
If you get one of those, I might get a Kevin Magnussen jacket. I love me Kevin. You know I have a soft spot for Kevin Magnussen.
I know you do. I think that'll be our official team for the 2023 season.
My Haas lanyard is coming through again, baby.
Your Haas lanyard is returning, and I gave you so much garbage for that for so long.
Fun fact for home listeners, I got the Haas lanyard for $3.78 on a fire sale after their first season. So it was out of date for so long. My keys are all on it.
It is one dirty lanyard.
It's dirty lanyard, but like...
It's seen some stuff.
When I bought it, I didn't work at a racetrack. And now, like, I work in racing to the point of going to industry only conferences, and like it's kind of symbolic, you know. We did leapfrog someone, and that is Nicky DeVries in the AlphaTauri. I'll be honest, Tim. All right, I'm gonna lump Nicky DeVries and Yuki Tsunoda in here. Similarly, I think AlphaTauri did not build a very fantastic car, and I think by the end of the year, Haas will leapfrog AlphaTauri.
I think so. I think AlphaTauri has shown up with an inferior car. I think there are so many rumblings about that team being spun off and sold now that Dietrich Mateschitz is gone. And honestly, it's not really a youth program anymore. They don't really have a driver development program. No. Not that they ever really did. It was just a way to fund a cheap way to identify talent. And, you know, Helmut Marko really isn't able to run that youth anymore.
Well, part of the thing too is Red Bull does not for this foreseeable future need young talent, if that makes sense.
No, they don't need young talent. You know, at some point, it'll be the end of the road for Christian Horner, who, hey, all your thoughts and feelings about him aside, he is a Hall of Fame team principal.
Yeah.
That guy is going to go down in the annals of F1 history as a game changer, for sure. He's very, very good at what he does.
But yeah, I mean, like you said, the young driver program, they don't need the young driver program.
Yeah, it's over. And the only purpose that team serves is to advertise their hideously expensive clothing brand.
It's also very generic looking.
It is very generic looking. It's very uninspired. It's very expensive. And that's a very expensive way to only advertise a clothing brand, because you're not really doing anything else. Nick DeVries is a Mercedes development driver, not a Red Bull one.
Yeah.
So I think they're going to just put the clothing on Max and Checo and get rid of that team. So they didn't really invest a whole lot in the offseason. So they'll be out the back soon. And I fear that Alfa Romeo is in the same exact spot. They are fit to be sold. I think Audi was the last hurt I heard was going to be the purchaser there. So
Audi will purchase, and I think they're going to construct their own engine. But that will still be the Sauber team. But it's going to be the Audi Sauber. You know how Sauber works.
Yeah. So it'll be fine. But, you know, Alpha was only really a name. It was a Ferrari. So, you know, it'll be all right, I think. But those teams will drop out the back here soon. The teams that I think will make a big leap forward, because I believe, if I'm not hideously mistaken, that I have lost my place on my...
Oh, yeah. Well, I was going
to
say...
Wait. No, we go up to...
Yeah, number 12.
Number 12.
I was going to say teams that are making a step forward, a driver that I would say impressed me this week. Today, earlier this morning. I think Williams have built a better car. I think Alex Albon speaks for himself. Is he a world beater? No, but he's a very serviceable F1 driver. And I think Logan Sargeant had a pretty good showing, to be quite honest with you. All right. He finishes ahead of Kevin Magnussen in the Haas. That Williams looks like it is, you know, maybe not one of the 2 to 3 worst cars in the grid. You know,
no, I think Dorrington Capital should be really pleased with the step forward, you know, with their management team from the former Mercedes employee behind the pit wall, and with their new driver, Logan Sargeant, who did pretty well. I agree with you. He was actually more impressive than I thought he'd be. I would actually dare say he's an improvement to Nicholas Latifi from last year.
The goat like that?
Goatifi, yes.
The driver of all time?
Well, we had 2 billionaire Canadian children in Formula One. One is surviving and thriving, and the other one is bye-bye.
That's like 66% of the entire global Canadian population.
Oddly,
and that's just unsustainable.
And oddly, 66% of the national wealth.
So, yeah, I know, right? There's only 3 Canadians on Earth, and 2 of them can't be in Formula One, right? It'd be Nicholas Latifi, Lance Stroll, and Wayne Gretzky being the 3, of course.
Yes, and Lawrence Stroll actually probably just bought everything as a kind of a force tactic to be like, I am going to buy everything and outspend you so much, I will bleed out to win this.
I don't buy. Latifi was like, I'm Canadian. All right. No,
he's too much of a New Yorker.
Yeah, I was going to say, have you seen him interact with people that is not Canadian? I don't buy it for a second.
No, you need a hockey stick in their hands perpetually to be that mean.
But back to Williams here. The thing I think is worthwhile about to note about Williams is that Dorrington Capital bought Williams, right? So it's really Williams in name only. And there's a lot of, they're owned by an investment firm, right? I think that while I have no, delusions about Williams being a world beater team anytime soon, I do think that even the capital investment firm for Williams realized that when a capital investment firm buys a sports team, what that should tell you is that their number one objective is to grow the market valuation of said sports team. All right. The market may grow, but you ideally want to grow your valuation. That's how investments work, right? It's the same reason that you put money into the stock market. It's because you want valuation to grow, right? I think correctly, Dorrington Capital realized that the number one thing standing in between Williams at being an even more valuable F1 franchise, Tim, is the Williams sucked donkey nuts as a team.
Maybe
if you want to be worth more, you should be on TV more. And by being on TV more, you can't be, you can't barely be qualified and be 4 laps down. You have to be competitive and in battles. So I think that honestly, Dorrington Capital, you could say big investment groups, they don't really care whether you compete or not. I think Dorrington Capital is in a unique position where they realize, no. We have to compete. We don't always have to win, but we have to compete because like we were not even on TV for like 2 straight weeks at some points.
Yeah, and the lack of sponsors shows.
Yeah,
it really does show. So,
and sponsors, sponsors care about being on TV, right? Like,
that's the only reason they're doing this is to get, brand promotion. It's not just their altruistic desire to see motorsport advance. It's to get some return. And so, hence my belief in the rumor around the paddock about AlphaTauri.
Yeah. But
yes, that was really good for Logan Sargeant and Alex Albon. Splitting the two of them is another hopscotch we did with AlphaTauri's Yuki Tsunoda, who had a very Yuki day. It was nothing really to write that much home about, so we will keep his discussion brief. But then we move up to the ninth position where we
I'm going to interrupt you right here. Romain Grosjean in St. Pete running in second place. Oh, did he cook it? He's out of it. Oh, he crashed.
I just watched the replay. Oh, yeah. That's heartbreaking.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Oh, yeah, he turned in. He turned in on him.
It's just agony written all over his body.
Oh, my gosh. You see him punch the tires,
yeah,
too.
Oh, all over it. That is so good.
I thought, look, all right, for our non-IndyCar viewers, go watch IndyCar, for the love of Christ. It's great racing.
Oh, it's so good.
I don't know how we could say that, how many times you could repackage that, but please. But I thought this might have been his weekend. I thought it might have been. Who is that coming out there? Golly, he swung out of the pit lane like a bat out of hell. All right.
Unbelievable.
He's coming in on the outside of
the number three car.
Yeah, the number three car just taps him. Oh, goodness gracious. Yeah, that's tough.
That is gutting for him.
Yeah. Anyway,
but we move on to Alpine's Pierre Gasly, who had the better result for Alpine. He was the good side of the garage who did remember how to drive.
Scott McLaughlin, by the way, another driver I kind of love.
Wow. That was a very un-Scott McLaughlin like move.
Yeah, he was on the inside.
That was at the battle for first. He was trying to pass him.
Yep, and McLaughlin hit the barriers too. I missed that.
They're both out. Any IndyCar is literally any given Sunday. Anything can happen.
The wild thing is, for as much chaos as goes down, by the end of the season, you see the champion and you're like, yeah, he was the best driver this year, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, I don't know where Dixon is, but he's got to be close by. It's going to be another Dixon win, and we're going to be like, how on earth did he do that?
It really mirrors like the American and European soccer divide too, where like soccer in Europe is very big money clubs. We run it again, we run it again, we run it again. Not a lot of regulation, and we just, you know, Bayern wins the Bundesliga for 10, 12 straight years. And then the American soccer game, which is chaos all the time. Who wins? I don't know. Let's pass it to a defender. Just straight up skull. Or own goal? Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, and someone go explain to Tim what the offside rule is. He's been trying to understand it for years, but it still isn't sinking in.
Oh, Tim.
I don't get it.
You just can't be past the furthest back defender. That's
My God. It's so stupid.
You can't cherry pick. That's the beauty. Anyway, getting back to the European game, Yuki Tsunoda had a Yuki Tsunoda day, I think.
Yep. And we were talking about Pierre Gasly at Alpine, who had a really great weekend, I think, with a points finish. Hopefully we can see more out of Pierre. That went pretty decently for them. Valtteri Bottas looked very fighty in front of him in eighth place for Alpha.
Outdrove the daylights out of the Alfa Romeo car.
I
don't think that's a P7 car. I think Valtteri Bottas was a P7 driver today.
I think he was too, but he was P8. So P7, though, went to one George Russell.
Yeah,
who
you're
had
right.
Just a roller coaster of emotions today between trying to be offensive and chirping over race radio in the early stages of the race, asking if Lewis is just struggling behind him or if he's just got no pace. And, you know, his race engineer was like, he's just struggling, chill. And then he found himself defending a whole lot, which was a bummer. Lance Stroll, though, deeply impressive from his returns from a mountain biking accident. He did get lots of lavish praise from his teammate, Fernando Alonso, who definitely wasn't kissing Lawrence Stroll's ass for signing
no,
him
Dad,
to
No, Dad, no. Why would he do that? Why would he do that?
Ooh, it's almost like he learned his lesson from the GP2 engine comment.
Yeah,
and publicly slagging. Now he's just doing the opposite.
We're like 3 years into PR friendly Fernando, and it still feels weird.
It still feels weird. And on Drive to Survive, he did say after the news was broken about his transfer to Aston, he said, "I'm still the bad guy," and he walked out. And it's just like, oh, he just knows.
Like, he knows.
He knows. This does feel a little bit like Fernando of old, where while it is, you know, kind of nice to see him being yay raw team. I saw him turn really quickly on Alpine last year, and I'm like, you're so full of shit. But
this is the retirement of Sebastian Vettel all over again, where it was like I know, I realize if you watched for like 2 to 3 years in the Drive to Survive era, Sebastian Vettel seems like the most lovable guy, and by all means, Tim, I think both you and I love Sebastian Vettel.
Yeah.
But everyone just kind of forgets that Sebastian Vettel, and especially Fernando Alonso might have been the most toxic driver in the planet. For like
he might
decade.
Still be in some ways. He like, might still be. Wait, he might still could, have it in him.
You could go back to the opening like episodes of this podcast and we talk about the stink of drama that follows Fernando.
Yeah, it's just like cancer, just everywhere he goes. But
it's so weird to see him be like, oh yeah, you know, we really respect the give and take. And
yeah.
Like,
we, and it's just like, oh, how's he doing? Oh, he's such an incredible driver. It's like, shut up. But
the funny thing is I still loved drama-esque Fernando. I need a shit stir.
It's kind of like he's starting to get some confidence driving again. He's not being constantly humbled all the time in an inferior car. And now old Nando is starting to come back out. The original Nando. Young Nando, I guess is what I'm saying.
I just want to, before we move on from Lance Stroll, I just want to say, if you are a young and aspiring driver, or you're a driver of any sort, for the love of God, stop riding bicycles. Please, I beg you, stop riding bicycles, drivers.
Or don't, whichever one you want.
I know, Tim, you're sitting here like, man, I like bicycles.
I gotta work on those.
How many high level drivers have we seen injured over the past year and a half due to bicycles? Is it like four?
Alonso, his teammate, was the other one. He couldn't start last year because his face was broken from an accident he had. Or
oh
was
my
that
gosh,
2 years
you can't
ago?
Forget who was it? Alex Zanardi, right?
Yeah, Zanardi.
Didn't Zanardi
had a,
get
he,
an accident?
That was on a
bicycle.
Bicycle.
Accident?
He was on a recumbent bike because of his injuries.
Was he the one too who got hit by like a truck, or was it a different?
That I think it was a different one.
Yeah. So,
but anyway, neither here nor there.
You can continue biking. Just know that if you're an F1 or a former F1 driver, you're absolutely tempting fate.
You absolutely are. But you know who didn't tempt fate was the guy who finished ahead of Lance Stroll, Lewis Hamilton. Lewis Hamilton, I think, put in a pretty respectable weekend, or a pretty respectable race day, given how far off the pace Mercedes looked in testing. I still think they are off the pace. I think they have to ditch whatever aerodynamic philosophy they're using with the inverted side pods, because it ain't working. And
it ain't working.
No, it's not going to work moving forward. So hopefully
especially
they do something.
When you look at the car designs this year, a lot of cars copied either Ferrari or Red Bull. In fact, an increasingly large amount of cars look like Red Bull or Ferrari did last year, right? You see a lot of cars doubling down on that. And that should tell you that we figured out two ways where we can make this work. And that third way, you know, maybe nobody else believes in it.
Yeah, nobody else believes in it. And nobody else has fallen off the pace like you are.
I will say this about Lewis, though. You know, I haven't seen people say he's washed, just that he's lost his way. The P5 today with the car that he had proves to me again, and I think George Russell is right there with him, to be real with you. If that was a championship contender car, Lewis Hamilton would be demolishing the field.
Yeah.
Like, Lewis Hamilton's skill level has not gone down.
No, it has not. It is still deeply, deeply impressive.
If anything, this is a testament to people who during Lewis's time finished P5, P4, P6, and drove the wheels off of a car. It's a testament to the old phrase that, like, in order to win a championship, you have to have a championship winning car, and then you have to be a really good driver. Being a really good driver doesn't always just get it done.
No, but I think Lewis had a good weekend, so.
I do too. All around, not a terrible 5-7 for Murphy.
Especially with where they were thinking. But you know who did have a tumultuous weekend? Carlos Sainz, who pitched up a really, really disappointing fourth So it was with Ferrari. Yeah, it was a reliability issue. It was a all around issue, and it just kind of felt deflating this weekend. They realized that their competitor Red Bull had not taken a step back. They had indeed stepped forward, and they have more competitors in the nearby field. They all kind of seemed, just as a general tone of the Ferrari interviews I saw, as kind of deflated, because they came in thinking they had done a really great job. So an entirely deflated team, and then watching Leclerc have those issues, I think they're going to have early season yips for at least the two or three races, the first two or three, and I hope that they can get their act together with Fred Vasseur at the wheel, but I'm not sure. But
Oh my
Carlos Sainz
gosh.
turns out a disappointing fourth after
Oh, no.
was there an IndyCar incident? Left.
I was
Oh
just
no, they're
watching
going
a uh, I was
they're going
watching a
through
I was
the
Yeah,
replay.
they're going through they were going through replays, and they were just about to restart a race. So I just kind of glanced down and I watched the lap, what was it, 23 incident
Oh
or
yeah.
35 incident
So
again.
there've been
Anyway,
a lot
sorry,
of
my bad.
incidents in St. Pete. No, it's okay. But I was just going to say that I think they'll start to recover a bit once they get off the back foot. But for now, they're going to kind of have a hard time. But the happiest bunny of all is going to be, beyond Christian Horner, is going to be Fernando Alonso, who puts that Aston Martin up onto the podium places after he defeats the younger Spaniard in the closing stages of the race.
You know, how do I say this? I'm surprised and I'm also not surprised. All right. One, Fernando Alonso, we know that even at his age, is a hell of a driver that can take it to, I mean, he can fight with anybody in the field, given equal machinery, right? I mean,
Yeah.
if you put him in a Red Bull and Max in a Red Bull, that's, and Max is an all-timer driver. Even then, I think I might give a 55% to Fernando just because of how wily he is, how
He
cunning he
is
is.
quite wily.
And
But Fernando,
also,
yeah, go ahead.
I was gonna say, also Aston Martin surprises me, yes, but it also doesn't surprise me because I kept thinking all weekend, Tim, going back to when Lawrence Stroll bought out the team that would eventually become Aston Martin, right? I remember just thinking, like, Force India Racing Point at that point, by the way. I remember thinking, and we said on the podcast, I'm like, look at the money that's coming in. Look at the talent that's coming in. This is a team that could slowly build up towards, being on the sharp end of the field.
Yeah.
And I were kind of seeing it, and we saw the groundwork laid for it 2 to 3 years ago.
We definitely did. And I'm sorry, I was just watching the highlights and looking at the fastest laps of the race as well, to see who scored that last point, to see whether or not, because I know I can see that Fernando kind of slowed down in the closing laps, and it looks like he had a 38 second gap, and I think it was a celebration at the end. But Zhou Guan Yu got the final point for the fastest lap on lap 56 when he banged in an average speed of 207.276. So that extra point went to no one, because you cannot be outside the points to score that. I only half heard what you said, and I apologize.
Oh no, I was just saying we saw the groundwork laid with Aston Martin. Years ago we talked about how Lawrence Stroll, when he bought it up and you saw the Mercedes talent coming in, we said, like, look at the talent, look at the money that's coming in, look at this, look at that. And it shocks me, but it doesn't shock me. Fernando Alonso is gonna be a happy camper, what with the sheer amount of,
Resources.
success that this weekend has. Yeah, coming back to the podium is no small feat, especially when Ferrari and Mercedes are back at you.
Yeah, and I'm hopeful that Fernando can keep doing this, and that he kind of finds new life at the end of his career here, because it would be really fun, like really, really fun, to see a three-way fight like within the teams for second, third, and fourth.
Oh gosh, I this is a pipe dream. Please just, we're choosing optimism. That's our theme this year. All right.
Correct.
My optimistic
Are you
take
adopting my, yeah,
is
are you
that
adopting it too?
Fernando adopts villain Fernando persona, takes a title, and retires.
I think that would be the most heavy metal axe, you know, jam ever to get out and just be like, sometimes you just got to be the villain and just lets it go. That would be an awesome way to go. But yeah, I agree. I think that's going to be our show mantra. Let's embrace the optimism and try to look at this in the best light possible and keep our hopes up.
Indeed. And if you're Red Bull, there's nothing you can do but keep your hopes up, because good gracious almighty, it's yours this year. If this is how it's going to go.
That's right. That's right. But yeah, so St. Petersburg has not restarted yet. Or no, it has.
We're
18 laps to go, and it looks like Pato O'Ward is out in front for McLaren.
Pato O'Ward, Marcus Ericsson, and Scott Dixon, followed by Alexander Rossi in fourth, and Callum Ilott with a good showing in fifth so far.
But there's Dixon in third.
Yeah, is it dumb of me to want to say Dixie takes the championship this year? But for real, I think Pato O'Ward wins the championship this year.
Huh. I don't know how I feel about that.
You don't know how you feel about that?
Yeah, because I both agree and disagree.
Go on, please.
I'm torn because it's Dixon.
It's Dixon.
It's been too long. It's been two, three years.
I mean,
yeah, it's been too long. That's what I'm saying. It just doesn't feel right to me. But we'll see.
It's been what, 2 whole years? Yeah, you're right. It's just been 2 whole years. He can't allow that to happen. The last time we had 2 whole years without, the last time we had 3 years where Scott Dixon didn't win one was 2012.
Wow. 11
three Lewis
years.
Championships.
Man.
Yeah, no, 2013 it was Dixon, then it was Power Dixon, Pagenaud, Newgarden. There's 2 years, and then Dixon won in 2018. Then Newgarden, then Dixon, then Pelot and Power. So what are we getting this year?
That's crazy. That is just crazy. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, we will look forward to the next race weekend for Formula One, where we are heading to Saudi Arabia, not too far away, but that is not next weekend, but the following on March 17th. And then the following 2 weeks later is Australia. So that'll be a boring one, but Saudi Arabia might prove a little interesting.
Yeah. And while we're at Australia, IndyCar will journey on over to Texas. For the PPG 375.
Bummer.
At least it's not expel, because I would expel that track from the schedule.
He's here all week, folks.
Hey, thank you. Tip your waitresses, yes. Tim,
yep.
Before we go, Saudi, it's a track. It's not as amazing as I think it was hyped up to be. How would you rate this last week's race, or this today's race? I keep forgetting it happened today. Yeah. How would you rate today's race? I would say Bahrain is a fantastic track, but I would say personally this race was like a C minus D plus.
I was going to give it a C plus, because I liked some of the late stage heroics, seeing Gasly go from last to ninth, I thought was really great. And seeing Fernando do what he did was really great, and seeing Mercedes not, you know, totally get creamed was good. But the rest, yeah, I agree with you. I think with Ocon's shenanigans, I described it to our group chat as long periods of tedium punctuated by moments of either brilliant, or, you know, pure brilliance, or sheer stupidity, and there is nothing in between with that race. And I just got to give it a C, I think.
Yeah, I would agree. It's I gave it a C minus, because to me, I'm like, it is below average.
It was below average, but we're off and underway. Saudi Arabia, I hope, will be a better race, but I don't think we'll have anything good until the end of April in Azerbaijan.
Yeah, I would agree. Saudi can be, it'll be chaotic, I think, but it will not be a good race.
No, it'll be a war of attrition.
Yes. All
So.
right. So, one last thing. Today's episode title is.
Ooh, what would be a good one for this one?
I want to put in all caps, for the love of God, get off your bike.
I don't know, because honestly, I liked that storyline. I thought it was just brilliantly stupid of a little privileged playboy to, break his hands trying to do something silly before the Formula One season starts. But I apologize if anyone can hear that. That is my German Shepherd Chance, who has decided to start howling, and Clarence is joining him. So this is where I live. I have a wolf pack.
Okay. All right. Good storylines. Merry racing. All
Yep.
right. Well, for that, we will talk to you next week. Could be me and Tim. Could be Tim and Dylan. We will see. I'll be out in the wastelands of Iowa, a place that doesn't even really exist with
It'll
family.
be all
So,
right, though. You got to do what you
yeah.
got to do.
Got to do what I got to do. And until such time as we talk to you again, which again will be next week, light up TBD. I've been Luke.
I've been Tim.
See ya.